Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason. This is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com, Monday, November 3rd, final 2 months of the year. We're not ready to do the year in review series yet. That'll begin later this week. However, I had a bunch of AEW thoughts and talking points and hot takes and notes and all that stuff that I've been keeping for at least a year. And so I was cleaning out some stuff the other day, and I'm like, I should probably get some of these out there. I got to expose them. I have to expel them from my MacBook. I just have to get them out, this notepad doc. And so I figured, who could I talk to about this that I haven't chatted with in a while? And so we welcome back Mike Della Camera, who is an AEW pay-per-view previewer slash columnist for this very website. And so, yeah, Mike returns for a second appearance, and we talk all about kind of just a bunch of AEW hot takes and so on and so forth. Some complaints, some praise, some everything in between, things we'd like to see, and so on and so forth. So if you're a fan of AEW, and you like talking about the promotion, not about the business side like I did last week with Brant Thurston, I think you're going to enjoy this here podcast. So without further ado, let's get to this conversation with myself and Mike Della Camera talking a bunch of stuff about AEW, like 3,822 hot takes or something like that. Enjoy. Well, earlier in the week, I talked to Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics. We talked about the business side of AEW. And I was thinking, I had all these notes and stuff I've kept throughout the year and just this large notepad, as some people do on their laptops. I'm like, I got to get some of this stuff out because it's going to be expired pretty soon. And who else to do that with than Mike Della Camera joining me for the second time. Mike, of course, the AEW pay-per-view previewer, the official one of the website. And so we get to hear his words and read his words 9 times a year, which is always fun. And Mike, welcome back, and happy Halloween as we're recording this on Friday, October 31st.
Josh, I could have been anywhere in the world, but I'm here with you, and I am thrilled to do it.
Yes, it's a good time. You have any Halloween plans this weekend?
I'm too old. I'm too washed to do anything for Halloween. No kids, so it would be kind of weird for me to go trick-or-treating.
That's true. I always, the when the teenagers stop at the door, there's that mix of like, okay, they're getting that age. And then this one's like, they're way too old to be out getting, bite-sized Butterfingers and, Kit Kats and things like that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. We lucked out here because as a fellow New Englander, have you heard of Beggar's Night?
Beggar's Night? No, but I want to.
Okay. Well, you're going to now very quickly. And the listeners are too, because some communities may have this. So in the Seacoast, New Hampshire community where I live, a lot of towns do Beggar's Night instead of Halloween. So that they do trick-or-treat the night before, not the night of Halloween. Mm-hmm. And it's the craziest thing I've ever heard. And I guess it's like played in Virginia and parts of Ohio. And like there's random pockets in the U.S. that do this stuff. And I don't know why. And every single year, my friends are like, why are you showing pictures of your daughter tonight? And I'm like, because we do trick-or-treating tonight. What? And every single year, I have to do the whole thing all over again, this Beggar's Night. Luckily, we had so much rain yesterday. We're actually doing it on the proper holiday itself, being tonight being Friday. Praise Krampus or whoever.
Yeah. As God intended or whatever. Right?
Exactly. All right, let's get into some hot takes. Let's see. So this is going to be a mix of some praise, as wrestling fans do, Mike, praise, complaints, in between. But we care about things like this. This is what we talk about. It's what we think about on walks and driving around and complaining online and all those things. Here's one of my takes. And again, you do not have to agree with any of these. Only the listeners do. I love Hangman Page as my AEW world champion, but I don't love the challengers. I don't like how things have been set up recently. And I was thinking about this, that babyface is winning this title or any real title today. They're like rom-coms. Once the couple gets together, now what? And that's like the biggest thing for so many of these babyface champions. And it's not just AEW, it's WWE and other. And it's like they don't know, the promoters and bookers, they don't know what to do afterward. And that I think generally, you know, when people look back at title reigns, it hurts it because if you don't have the challengers kind of make it important along the way, that reign I think kind of suffers a little bit. I think we recognize the heel reigns a lot more than we do the babyface reigns because it's that story of, again, in today's wrestling world, good versus evil as much as you can buy that. But also like when Hangman Page beat Moxley at All In, it felt like a moment and it felt like, okay, we've been ready for this for a long time. And like, it just felt like a lift. Right. And I mean, the Page matches have been good. I think that his challengers, while good in ring, they haven't provided to me that there's not that long list of challengers that months ago I thought they were going to have. What do you think?
I think that with any babyface champion, they finish their journey. They finish that hero's journey with the win. We're going to remember the win. We're going to remember him beating Moxley. And then what happens next always falls flat. Not always, but for the most part, it does fall flat. Like you said, they've done everything that they, quote, need to do to get to the top. So what happens when you get to the top? There's not really ever a compelling story set up to move the next 3, 6, 10 weeks of shows to get to the next pay-per-view. And with Paige, who is, as in my opinion, like as good as it gets, right? He deserves to be at the top of the company. He's not really been done any favors by the programs that have been set up for him after. In theory, a Kyle Fletcher, Adam Page title match should be a huge deal. With the way they have built up Fletcher, with where Page stands in the company, that should have been more than a random fall pay-per-view. The stuff with Joe is pretty good, but is any of it really memorable? The most memorable thing was what happened on Wednesday when he dressed up like Tony Schiavone, which probably the best piece of wrestling camp that's come out in a long time.
Yeah.
But if that's the highlight after such a triumphant win, I do think it's fallen a little flat.
So here's what he's done since that night on July 12th. So he defended against John Moxley at a Dynamite, everyone banned from ringside match. That took place about 2 weeks after. So that was on Dynamite. Then he defended the title against MJF. And you remember kind of the muddled build to that in terms of the cash in. Now I'm not cashing in. Like I can win by count out. And just all this stuff that was just like added at the last second. It's like, why do you need this? Then you had the Kyle Fletcher match, which again, great in ring and on paper. But in terms of, you know, Fletcher was a TNT champion at the time and really just hadn't really, and I'll get to the TNT title in a minute, but just hadn't really kind of been like pushed like, okay, you're in the top shelf now, right? It was kind of like all of us in that knew there watched that follow this stuff from kind of the discussions and all that. We kind of knew this was Paige is going to win. It was basically could Fletcher hang at that level and kind of give off that aura of I'm going to be a future guy, which I think most of us knew, but it's kind of, they needed something. Then he defended the title against Lee Moriarty a few weeks later, actually the next week on Dynamite, and then defending against Samoa Joe at WrestleDream, and then he's going to defend him against him again coming up at Full Gear. And again, no complaints about the Samoa Joe match. It was random how that kind of happened. I guess that's kind of the point is it doesn't feel fluid in terms of, like months ago, it felt like we just had like a few there. But nothing feels fluid. It feels like we have to make this work for this month. What can we do? Let's turn the ops heel. Let's just make this happen. And now we're going to do a rematch at Full Gear, which I assume is going to have some sort of stipulation. Otherwise, it just seems like another random kind of rematch.
Yeah. And I don't really care for that. And it sounds like you don't either. He just lost to him and now they're running it back right away. I guess now the ops have formally turned heel, but Joe was a heel in that match. Joe kind of gets the same reaction from the crowd regardless of his alignment because he's Joe and he's great. But unless there is a compelling stipulation for that, could we have not done better? Are we afraid to book Paige against Lashley? Like what is the holdup there? Why are we not doing that match?
Right. Right. Yeah. I thought that the one thing I think, and I'm kind of getting this in a second, is the desire and the confidence in being able to beat some of your top guys and realize that it's okay because people just forget, right?
Yeah.
It's not like if it's the first time between Paige and Yeah, if it was a Lashley match, which or some, or even Hook, or it could have been Ricochet or something like that, it would have been different. But you have to be confident in being able to beat some of these upper level guys, or if it's someone in one of the ever growing Don Callis family and so on. I think that they have to be confident in being their top guys and realizing that, and being them more often and realizing that everyone's going to be like, it's cool, it's fine, like it's just part of it, because there's only so many things you can do to attract people in, that you have to be able to, you can't have everyone at the top stay undefeated forever and stay away from each other except for like one time a year, because then otherwise it's just a lot of this middle. You mentioned that your column last time, this fall malaise. It just feels like everything's just kind of like, just like straight line, and nothing really feels like important, especially at the top level.
So they pinned Okada, right? So they're willing to do it. How many times has he been pinned? It's less than six, right? I don't have it off the top of my head. But if you're going to let Bandido, who is great, but is the Ring of Honor world champion, and who cares? Truthfully, who cares? But is also the AEW tag team champion, pin somebody that never loses and has been presented as this deity in the company, as this larger than life, godlike figure. If you're going to let him get pinned, let anybody get pinned. People can lose in wrestling. Undefeated streaks are boring. You can take a loss. Lashley can get pinned. He can lose to Paige. It's fine. It makes sense. Nobody's going to think Bobby Lashley is weaker losing to the world champion. And it's a better program and it's something interesting. And people love Lashley.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's different. And I think that's the key, is it's new, it's different. So going to my next point, and kind of leading this, I think AEW needs more distinct tiers of talent. So when I look at the AEW roster page, and I'm kind of scrolling through, and I'm like, who, and this has been a thing for a while, who is the upper crust world title challengers? That's how I consider like the upper part of like the singles, right? So there's Paige, there's Strickland, who's hurt, there is Ospreay, who's hurt. I guess Okada would be considered the upper crust, right? I think he kind of has to be. And then I would assume, I guess I would say Moxley, and just by virtue of him being around so long, him holding title, I still consider Omega the upper level just because of what he's meant and all that.
MJF.
Yeah, I would say MJF, and I think it feels like that's about it right now. I mean, you can slide guys up, but I think and I look at that group, and again, most of those guys either they're hurt or they're out there, they're doing other things, right? And there's just not that consistent, like, this is the top group, and then here's kind of the mid. Like, I think you just need that, and it kind of aligns with titles, right? Your world title, your unified title should be your kind of your intercontinental secondary title equivalent, and then there's the TNT title. And I think the TNT title is like a, it can be a detriment to some guys. Like Kyle Fletcher shouldn't be the TNT champion at this point anymore. He had that world title match. He had that fifth match with Briscoe, which I don't know if we needed, but we did, again, the rematches and so on, especially in the mid-level. Like, to me, that should have been his catapult. He loses there, and he's like, all right, now I am in this world title mix and with the top guys. And that's kind of my jam. That's where I am. And yeah, we talked about kind of the top guys to lose. And I also brought this note that Dave has talked about this before a lot on, whenever they do like world title contender battle royals or tournaments, all of your top guys should be looking to get the world title, to me. And he says the same thing. And I find this a lot. Like, it is, again, it goes back to, it's okay to lose, but your whole point of being in a wrestling promotion, as from a story standpoint, is we're spending our belief saying everyone here should be gunning for the top title. It's great if you win this one, you're great if you win this one, but that means you're the man at top. Or if the women's division, that means you are going for number one. And I don't feel like it's the tiers are that well cleared out, which results in like a lot of just a cluster in the middle. And it's like, who do I really care about that's going to really stand out and do all this? So that's kind of what I think. What do you think?
I want to talk about what you said about the cluster in the middle, because I think that that is right now, it's just mud, right? Who is the mid card? Who are the people on TV every week wrestling the matches that are not world title contenders, right? That seems like right now it's Jet Speed. It seems like it's Jurassic Express. It seems like it's FTR. It seems like it's mostly the tag team division at this point, and that the singles mid card is almost an afterthought, or it's mixing and matching between those two tag teams.
Right.
I think that the top is strong. You listed 8 or 9 people that could be at the top of the card, and we could do the same thing for the women's side, which I think arguably right now is stronger than the men's. But it's that layer in between that people get stuck. And I think part of it is the lack of urgency to move people out of that tier.
Yeah.
When they have momentum. And I will use Willow Nightingale as the example for this. If you've read anything that I've ever put on this site, she's it. She's the goods. Listen to the reaction that she gets. Watch her work. Watch her work in AEW. Watch her work in Mexico. Watch her work in Japan. And tell me why she is not a top of the card level act all the time. Tell me why she is in the conglomeration, which is too cute by half and just terrible. Mm-hmm. It is a bad gimmick that is saddling two very strong performers in Willow and Orange Cassidy as like, you're a joke if you're in that. Like, oh, the sitcom thing. Look at their Tron. It's so cute. It's so funny. It's all right, cool. You're not serious. You're not a serious
right
talent. It's if you don't know what to do with someone, don't stick them in a gimmick like that. So I think that there's a lot of start and stop that has put us in this position where it's the clear top, and then everybody else is just in the middle that they kind of get warmed up, and then they get cooled off, and they get warmed up, and they get cooled off. And it's been happening for years.
And they get put in this new thing, which is 10-man tags, eight-person tags.
Yeah.
It is like there's multi-person matches. It's a way to get people on the show, but to your point, it's just a way it doesn't make anyone seem important. It doesn't push them up to that level. And I mean, to that point also, like the big factions, they're too big, you know, like the Callis family. And that's a thing too. That's also what hurts guys like Fletcher. And if he's going to hold the TNT title, fine. But there's like 3-4 people that if they weren't in that group could potentially be contenders. Now the Takeshi, you know, Takeshi we know is going to break out.
Yeah.
And he's next in terms of that, getting that world title level. You know, he's going to have a run. My thing is, it's going to happen is he's going to enter the Continental Classic. He's going to beat Okada at World's End. He's going to take that whole title off him, and that's going to be his rocket. And then at some point by the end of next year, I'm going to assume he's probably going to be the world title. But he's too talented. He's too, like, it's too obvious. He's next up. I think Bandido is probably a great candidate. You know, once that team gets split up, at some, even though they're so much fun to watch, it's kind of the tough thing about it, to your point, you know, the ROH style, it just doesn't mean anything. But I want to see him in that mix with like that top group. I want to see Takeshita in that mix with the top group, to the point that as viewers, we have that suspension of belief of like, I don't know which way they're going to go here. And that's when wrestling at its best, that's when it's at its best. I don't know. For as smart as fans as we are and people we know everything that's going on, it's like, I don't know what's going to happen. I think I might know, but I'm just not sure. That's when it really gets fun. They haven't had that top mix for a while. But yeah, I think the big factions don't help. And we're going to talk about Will in a minute. Anything else on the tiers of talent before we move on to the next point?
Before we go to the next point, do you think that the Continental Classic rights the ship at all? Puts the right people in that and starts building the momentum towards what you're talking about?
It can. I've enjoyed it the past 2 years. I think part of the reason is it's new, fresh matchups for the most part. You may see a couple occasional, but like last year when you had like Shelton Benjamin in there, and he's like, we had like Shelton Benjamin Okada match, right? And we had like, it's like, what universe do we ever think that was going to happen? And that's kind of the fun part about things like that, is this new stuff, and it's okay to lose, and no one has stopped cheering for, you know, we hurt people when Shelton Benjamin comes out, right?
Yeah.
It's a thing where if you're saying this is where the best wrestle and like the in-ring really matters, then people have to lose, and people, you have to trust the fans to be like, to realize, oh, we're not going to think that they're a loser. We're not supposed to care about that after. That's the whole point. The best beat the best, and some people have to lose. And it doesn't have to be 50-50. But yeah, I think who they put in the Continental Classic every year, that's certainly really important, right? Because then it kind of tells you, all right, here's who's kind of in the mix. And he can kind of see, oh, maybe this might be the final four. I like how they kind of added that twist last year. And yeah, you might be able to kind of predict it, but I think it gives you new matchups, and also gives you a good idea of who they really think can go in this thing and who might put on interesting matches with some of the top talent and make them look even better.
And it gives them something to book around. It gives them that foundation to know what's going to be on the shows every week leading up to the pay-per-views. And then you fill in the pieces around that. And I think that this has been happening in the fall now pretty consistently. It's not hard to draw a conclusion that when your owner has five jobs, that his attention could be reasonably split. And that's not said with any type of insult in mind. That's just objective fact. There's only so many hours in the day, and you can only be so good at so many things. But I think that gives it the structure, and it gives the program direction, and it's easy to book around.
Yeah. I think at this point it is, it's obvious Tony Khan's doing too much. Like, he's not dumb. He's not the smartest person in the world, you know, and you can have as many assistants as you want, but like, if you're, and these aren't just thinking like small tasks. Like, he's doing this for an NFL team, this for a soccer team. He has the analytics company, which is in Massachusetts. He has AEW. He's also doing stuff with Ring of Honor. He's trying all these relationships. I can appreciate someone want to work a busy schedule, but having worked in sports myself, I can't imagine being like, okay, we're going to do this and then this and then this. He's not superhuman. He's just doing too much. And I think it's hard when people get in positions of power, especially in sports. They don't want to let those positions go because it's very hard to get back in. So if you were to ask him what means more to you, I don't know if he could answer that, because part of it, the Jags and the soccer team, part of his family thing, but also AEW is his thing that he started. So you'd want to think he'd be like, let me just commit to this, because we have a pretty big opportunity here. We have one other giant competitor, and that's it. I mean, unless you count TNA as the number two company, since Tina Marella might have you think, right? It's like there's a key, and this is a very important stretch for his next TV deal and all this stuff. So yeah, I don't know if we're getting his full attention. If we are, is it good enough when he has all these other things that demand his attention as well?
Yeah, and let me know when TNA gets that TV deal. Yeah, okay. We'll see what channel they're on.
Yeah, very strange that they took a month off. After their biggest show of the year, they have a little bit of momentum going, and then they take a whole month off new shows. It is really weird. I still don't understand why they do that. Okay, going to Willow Nightingale. Long TBS title reigns suck. They kind of suck. The TBS title has existed for, as we're recording this, 1,395 days. 1,395 days. Over 1,000 of those days belong to two women out of that whole time, Jade Cargill and Mercedes Moné. It is no shade on either of them, but I think there's no reason you have to have a women's title, a world women's title, and a TBS title treated equally. That just shows that you don't have confidence in, again, beating one or the other, which they finally did at All In, but it took a long time to get there. And during this whole time, you have all these other women that have come in and really could have used a little bit of a bump. Willow Nightingale is the red circle around her. She should have been the world champion by now. She should have at least been a long ring world TBS champion by now. I mean, she won it, but I think she held for less than 2 months, you know, and just everyone can see it. And I don't know what we're waiting for there. And I think it just kills all these contenders underneath. Cause then it's like, well, now what? Then you have to bring in like people from New Japan or Stardom and CMLL, or you elevate someone for like a Harley Cameron when it just seems a little bit too early, but you bring in ones and it just feels like Mercedes is not going to lose to this person, right? I mean, it just doesn't feel like it. And there's no good, you lose that ability to cultivate, create that true second tier, and then they move on to the women's title. You know, Chris Statlander, she had a short 157-day run, I think I read, for the TBS title. I don't remember anything about it. And, you know, she got the world title. It just felt like a surprise, and it's taking a while to kind of get her there. But because had she had that long run, you know, and it kind of slaughtered up at the right time, I hate these long title runs because I think you prevent other women in any long title run like this. You prevent other women from being elevated up. Willow could have been helped up by that. Chris Statlander, even if Harley Cameron had beat Mercedes Moné in Australia, that could have helped her. You know, even if it was a short reign, right? I mean, you could have done something, but and now it's a case of you, as fans are watching this and like, okay, well, clearly they're waiting for something much bigger. And that can also hurt because then every title defense we have, there's zero suspension belief that she's going to lose. So I think with both, yeah, I think Willow should have been the one to end Jade's title run because she had lost to her a couple times during that. You know, Statlander eventually did. But just the way that Willow kind of brought along, just like this just seems to be the perfect handoff, and they didn't do that. And yeah, it's very strange.
What are they waiting for that would have been bigger than the Toni Storm Mercedes match? If that's the
Right.
match that they build to, that's as big as it's going to get. Those are your two biggest women's stars in the company, two of the biggest stars, period, in that company. So it, and she lost, and that was a surprising and I think correct decision. But what are we doing now? It goes back to what we talked about before with, you win the title, then what? Mercedes lost, then what? Right? Nobody has helped other than her. And by the way, I do think the belt collector gimmick is great. And I think that it's very clear that she is doing this. This is not like a hot take. She's doing it to overcompensate for not having the belt that she wants. Oh, look at all these belts that I have. I have 13 of them, but I don't have, they all don't add up to the one that I really want. And I think that that's an interesting character. And I think that that's fun. And I don't think that she needs the TBS title to have that. I think that she, honestly, if they're not going to beat her for it, she should just give it up and say, I am going for the world title. This is the one title I don't have. It means everything to me. All of these are anchors. And then she goes for that. Otherwise, I don't see a clean way out because who have they built up that could reasonably beat her?
Right.
Jamie Hayter could, but hasn't.
Yeah.
Queen Amanada, no. Sky Blue, no. Julia Hart, no. Megan Bain could, but no.
Right.
None of they're all doing blood and guts, right? So they're busy doing something else, and it's like Mercedes exists almost in isolation, where she's doing these exhibition matches with people from other companies because they don't really know what to do with it internally.
Yeah. Then all those women you mentioned, none have like long win streaks, right? They brought in Tekla from the outside, and then they kind of put her with this group, and you know she's been kind of out because they wanted us to do something with Jamie Hayter. Jamie Hayter got hurt. Jamie Hayter still has never she still has never recovered from being out for a year
No,
and a half,
no.
you know, and that sucks
That's
because
too bad because she's so good.
she was right there, and then that timing is everything. She got hurt, and then all that momentum. It's just been hard to. Hard to bring it back. You know, Athena should be on the main roster and not in Ring of Honor. Again, she's held the Ring of Honor women's title for 1,000 days. What's the point? You know, she should be in this top level mix consistently and not bouncing back and forth. I just don't get it. None of the women have long title streaks or long win streaks, long challenger streaks. So when you don't have challengers, it hurts the champions. And I think the women's division. I think the tag team titles are a great idea. It's one of those things now where when you have large rosters, new belts, but lots of belts gives people something to do. I don't necessarily think that's a great booking thing, but like to your point, the Continental Classic forces Tony Khan to have a structure, you know, and I think he really kind of struggles with that with some of these groups in the women's division in general is a big part of that. And even, you know, when he's talking about, this is why, you know, no one believes the Britt Baker stuff, right? In terms of, oh, she's just on the bench. You know, I realize she's not the best in ring, but people seem to care about her. You tell me you can't get her in the mix of one of these two, or you know, maybe have her come back to reheat Hayter and be part of something like there's some of these people in the Guantanamo Bay there's a role for, but they just kind of leave them, and it's like you know clearly that and that's the why no one believes it when it's just like oh she's a great person we'd love to have her back or you know she's on the bench or we have lots of top players on the bench like a sports team it's like you. No, no one believes this right now.
Yeah, if
Zero.
only there was someone that could do something about it. Oh, wait, it's the
There is.
billionaire that's talking about it. He's like, oh, I don't know why they're on the bench. This is so crazy. It's okay, my man, whatever.
All right. Next up. I think there should be more of an all hands on deck attitude when it comes to AEW. And by I say that is Excuse me. I think there's a couple things that I noticed a lot. I noticed a lot the past couple months, and again, that fall malaise line that you used has really kind of stuck with me because I look at we just passed by All Out, and it was a mix of vacation time slash other projects time slash injury time that really kind of affected that top level. So like Kenny Omega, is he around? Not around? Like he seems healthy. Is he not? Like I don't really understand what kind of what his deal is. I know the Andrade thing definitely kind of knocked things off track, but like you can't get back on track. And he not like he when he just appeared at Wrestle Dream instead of Wrestle, I was like, that seems strange. MJF is doing a movie. Adam Copeland is doing another film project. Of course, he and Christian, they had this is another thing that kills me. So Christian's on this list as well. Not upper level guy, but you kind of get what I mean. He and Christian had this big angle at All Out that opens the show with Beth Phoenix, Beth Copeland making her AEW debut returning and then or debuting, gets taken out. And it is, Cope is just like, well, I'm just going to take some time off and figure this out. So both of them disappear. That whole FTR thing just goes cold for a bit. Now, yeah, they can reheat it, but it's been like over what, been a month and a half at this point. And it just there's been like no follow-up to it, no mention of it. They're kind of FTR is going to get the title shot. Maybe Cope and Christian screw over FTR in that tag team title match next month or something like that. Will Ospreay hurt? Will Strickland hurt and so on. I think with some of these guys, like I appreciate the fact, and I'm sure the wrestlers do, that they can work outside stuff. I think in situations like this, you got to be like, okay, we need you back a little early, or we need, especially that upper level, because that's really what carries them and any promotion. And there's just a lot of like times where it's just we need people back, and this long break you're going to take or something, like you got to help us out. I mean, again, wrestler, compare people to WWE all the time. There are wrestlers that did film and then come back, film and then come back. And I don't know. It just doesn't feel like Tony Khan really makes them do that often. I think sometimes it can hurt.
Yeah, and I think that they need to prioritize it based on the quality of the outside project, right? Like, Cope, if you're doing a D-list horror movie, no, man, you gotta come to work.
Yeah.
You gotta come to where I'm giving you a seven-figure paycheck. If you, MJF probably has bigger things to do in terms of the scale and scope. He was in the Happy Gilmore movie. He was in the Iron Claw. So clearly he has a future in Hollywood that's probably bigger than anything that Cope is doing. And I know he's on that Percy Jackson show, but who cares? Like I'm 40. I don't watch that. But when you sent over the doc about this, and I was going through your hot takes, so I wouldn't burn my hand on the stove when you delivered them on this
Yes,
call,
of course.
I noticed something you had about should they not take as many outside independent bookings? And that was something that I actually disagreed with
Oh, good. Okay.
because I think that the people we've talked about, all these people that aren't being used, these people that are kind of stuck in the mud, they should be taking independent bookings. They have a lot of people that are very green on this roster that can use the reps. Julia Hart, Sky Blue, Anna Jay. Like, those are some folks that come to mind immediately. The Gates of Agony were tremendously helped by work. I mean, they worked Ring of Honor and they did other things too, but getting those reps to build up the strength of their act and figuring out what they want to be. Lee Johnson, Blake Christian, two more examples. Those are the guys that can go do other things. And if Moxley wants to go do Defy every now and then, or if Darby Allin wants to go work Prestige or whatever on the West Coast, cool. But by and large, your priority needs to be AEW if you are a top of the card wrestler, because people get hurt in wrestling and people get hurt all the time. And they've been pretty fortunate with injuries until now, like Ospreay getting hurt, Omega getting hurt, and I guess Danielson having to retire
Yeah.
because of his health. But they hadn't had something where, like WWE has had, where Seth Rollins had to give up the world title. So in a way, they've been lucky. But when you start to lose people, because you will always, it's like the NFL, people are going to get hurt. The roster you start the season with is never the roster you end the season with. So when these other guys are going away, it's like, oh, Ospreay's out for who knows how long, Swerve's out. The ones that are doing other things, you got to come back.
Yeah.
You
So
got
I
to come back.
think, yeah. So in that, so one of the things that has, our AEW wrestlers working so much elsewhere, good thing. I think to your point, I think the young, I've said this for a while too, like the younger talent should be working anywhere they can. I'm often surprised when they don't, you know, that they're not trying to get more out there, especially if they're available. I know sometimes Saturdays are tough, but I mean, Collision's taping a lot of Wednesday nights after Dynamite or Thursday. So certainly dates you can work in, whether or not their price is too high or whatever. Or again, is there that pressure on them to be like, you got to go work more, and it can't just be 3 minutes on a Ring of Honor taping? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you can't do, oh, we need you for a 30-second backstage tape at Collision. You should prioritize getting better in the ring and getting that reps and figuring out how to work around that.
So this point is really maybe not the all hands on deck, but kind of like when it comes to people like with a WWE, for example, the only place you can watch their talent is on WWE TV. With AEW, it's like they could be in CMLL, they could be in New Japan, some could be on an indie show, some could be here. I again, it's just very, it's the roster is too big. And it's I just wonder if they're working so much elsewhere is a good thing. Like the only place I can see them is on these two shows every single week or a pay-per-view. I think the younger talent should definitely be trying to work other places that they can. But it's it's weird. I think the bigger point, I think you did a good job explaining it, is the upper tier. Where's their priority? And I think when coming in, it should be, we need you. We're still a growing company. You're in year six or, you know, whenever they come on board, and like, yeah, the occasional outside project, we can do that. But we need to understand, like, or you need to understand, this is it. Like, we need your help here. We have 4 hours of TV a week, nine pay-per-views a year. We need you here. And if there's hesitance about that, then it's like, you know, that's when you're kind of like, this is just the way it is. And if you bring on the right people, they should be like, whatever it takes, right? And that's the hope. And not that these people are like anti-AEW people, but I think, you know, Tony Khan's gonna be a little tougher going forward. And I think I said this last year too, like he's got like he can't be everyone's friend, you know. He's got a company to run, he's got fans to entertain, tickets to sell, and all that. So yeah, I think I'd like to see that a little bit more. Of course, that goes in that whole world title picture we were talking about. The other thing, this came up with Brian Thurston the other day. We were talking about this. We're talking about other stuff, and NDAs came up. I thought about this. So we know that some of these relationships with certain people and Tony Khan have gone the other way. Cody Rhodes, CM Punk, and so on. There's a few people with NDAs, which, as Brandon noted, is the hot new thing in wrestling these days. NDAs, no non-disclosure agreements. And if Cody, it came up because we're going over some stuff from like the last quarter, and when, you know, Cody Rhodes started being a little bit more vocal about his time in AEW, they said there was a schism. He made another comment. He you know, was frustrated. He just couldn't take it anymore, or something. So we kind of go with, like, you know, if we had a graph, it was like Cody Rhodes, negative comments about AEW. It was like nothing. It's starting to edge up a little bit more. And there's talk about this book and how he's going to do this. And you can feel it. He started get in the water. He's just like, it feels kind of warm, right? I mean, he's made in WWE. There is, it's not like they're going to be like, don't do this. If Cody
Oh,
Rhodes
yeah.
or CM Punk at some point were to break their NDAs and say, because CM Punk also this year say he wants to write a book at some point, they would break the NDAs and say, here's everything that happened, and Tony Khan was to sue them, who would look worse? I think Tony Khan would look worse, and that puts him in a really a tough position in this thing of like, why even bother the NDA if you're going to look like an asshole if you go and sue these people for speaking the truth? Because at that point, the cat's out of the bag, and you could sue them, but people are like, well, they left because of this and this. So the only thing he could do for recourse is say, well, here's my side of the story. And I don't think he's going to do that. If you sue them, it looks awful. It's just, I had not really thought of it until this past week. Like, what do you think?
Well, first off, I think that I did not know how many contract lawyers existed on wrestling Twitter, because there all of a sudden were a lot of real big legal eagles talking about NDA language that I was like, I had no idea you guys knew so much about what you can and can't do. Aren't both sides under NDAs, right? So it's like if Punk breaks his, I think that's the one that is most interesting to me. But aren't the Bucks and Tony
Yes.
Khan and de facto, like it, NDAs go both
Yeah.
ways.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a legal expert, right?
There.
I mean, they're the God. I'm gonna sound like I'm such a like a corporate. They're there to protect both sides. Like, shut up. If Punk broke his NDA, it would be hilarious. It would be the funniest possible outcome. Would be for him to be like, I got mad because I didn't get to book Collision the right way, or whatever happened, or the Young Bucks were jerks. The Cody one, I think, would go bad for Cody. The Punk one, I think, would be fine. I think everything would blow over. Everybody would kind of like have a laugh. I think that the Cody of it all might be overestimating his popularity and the quality of his decision making.
Yeah.
Because the end of Cody's time in AEW was not particularly fruitful. A lot of that was by his own doing, with I'll never wrestle for the championship. I'm gonna leave my boots in the ring. Just doing some weird stuff.
Yeah, the never ending feud with QT Marshall.
Yeah, the Cody verse, all of that.
Yeah.
So if he wants to come out and say the truth, man, do it. Yeah, I think that it's gonna not be great, but I don't think if they do that, I don't think AEW looks small for taking that to court. This is a breach of contract. WWE would do the same thing if Tony Khan made a comment about Punk, other than, you know, Punk is a historically great wrestler. He did a lot of great things for AEW. Toe the company line. We know that Punk likes to get involved in lawsuits, right? He's no stranger to that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's a very small thing for all of these sides involved. Like, just grow up.
Yeah.
You are all multi millionaires and billionaires. Please find something better to occupy your time with, or give me all of your money.
You know that wrestling attracts strange people and strange mindsets, as we learn each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, what are we doing? What are we doing? So we'll see. We'll see. If one of these books comes out, that's when we'll kind of know and get a little bit into it for sure. Let's see. Along the way, having watched AEW since the start, things that we have got used to being AEW fans. And you just have to be like, well, this is just the way it goes. Here's my list, and we'll see if you have any extra ones. Anyone that makes a debut, it's always in a long match. One that goes to at least one commercial break. I think the one exception being Keith Lee, when he pounced Isaiah Cassidy to heaven. It's very, they're very long and very almost 50-50-ish style. Champions who lose rarely get rematches. And when they do, it takes a long time after the fact. I did a spin through like the AEW, the men's world title. At some point this year, it was like, it's one of these dumb things, Mike. I was brushing my teeth and I was just thinking about it. I think it was on a night after Dynamite. And I was like, why does it take so long to get rematches? Am I crazy? And I sat up in bed, looked at Cage Match, and looked at all the title reigns. And I was like, I think tomorrow morning I'm going to look at when the next time is they did. I think I have it somewhere, but it's like, it takes a long time for when a champion loses for them to get a rematch. The automatic thing, like the month after or week after, Moxley is like one of the few that actually does. Everyone else, it was like a year. Yeah, it looked like it took Samoa Joe over a year to get a title rematch. And I mean, it's two consecutive months.
And they usually go away. Like, you don't need to go away when you lose the title.
Right.
Like Moxley lost the title. He was right back to work. He hasn't missed the TV.
Right.
Like, it does, just because you lose the title, I don't think you always want to have a planned absence. Like, oh, so-and-so had the title for 8 months. Now they're going to get 6 weeks off. I think that they should be a part of the show. Otherwise, it kind of speaks to the silos and how things start to feel disjointed.
And it goes back to the point of, it's okay to lose.
It's okay to lose.
The people want that reaction the next day or the next show and be like, now it's the heel that has to eat shit.
Yep.
Or it's a baby face. It's just like, well, I got to try this again, or I got screwed out of it. You know, there's something there, but just to send them away makes it seem like you did the worst thing possible. You lost. How could you?
Hangman's win this summer would not have meant as much if he did not lose a whole bunch in the year leading up to it. Right.
Yep. It takes a while for new signings to get going. I look at Mercedes Moné, Ricochet. Often it makes going heel seems to be.
It is. It's, I'm happy to be here, and then it's not really hitting, and so a month later they turn them heel.
Yeah, exactly. Deonna Purrazzo started the same way. Now she's in her own kind of ring of honor hell and all this stuff. There will be some who don't thrive in chaotic environments, you know, some that get signed and just whatever's backstage, you hear all these like crazy things. There's some that just it just doesn't work for them. They sign and they come here and come to AEW and they're like, it just doesn't it this is too much, you know, and often they just find their way out or to Kanton Mobe. Talent disappears, especially that upper echelon. Again, just we'll have, like, to your point, you were just talking a minute ago, someone will lose, they'll disappear for 4 months, and we don't know, they plan time off or something like that, especially that upper group. There's just a lot of time off of that upper level. Silence is currency. We talked about the NDAs and things like that. We don't get a lot of open Tony Khan stuff. We rarely do. Let us talk about Deonna Purrazzo. That was actually a really refreshing answer he gave on one of his media calls when he actually addressed this whole thing about Mexico, this vaunted Mexico CML appearance, which apparently the match didn't go well, and so many people equated that to is she being taken out essentially off the chessboard completely because of that. And finally, months and months and months after this, someone just asked, and he finally opened up and addressed it, and it was good. There was no like big blowback. There was no. It was just like, okay, like at least we had something on the record. And there's so many things like we from the outside are like, what is going on? What is happening? And we have no idea. And it just, I mean, just like a brawl out. I mean, that's its own thing altogether. But silence is a currency for them, and I don't necessarily think it's the best one when sometimes that silence makes situations just worse and worse.
There's a lot that is unsaid that could be smoothed over just with, like you said, one paragraph answer,
Yep.
a statement, post on Twitter, whatever, that can soothe a lot of these troubled waters.
Exactly. Talent takes a long time to come back. You hear this a lot where even after an injury, they're ready to return and they're not rushed right back. It just, there's a, it is a, it's like months and months. You hear this all the time in interviews like, yeah, I was ready in July and, you know, I got brought back in September. You know, like a Jay White, for example. Jay White could be ready to go. He could have been ready for 4 or 5 months. We have no idea. But it takes a long time for them to actually kind of get back in the mix. And then this one, I think people know at this point, the pay-per-view fallout shows are the most important stuff happens the second week after, not the first night. And it's something where it's taken me like probably about 6 months to really kind of get that, because they used to do kind of that fallout show and like, okay, here's setting up the next thing and the stuff that really kind of sucks you in on the fallout show. But then it's usually the week after, like the Fright Night Dynamite was a lot better in terms and impactful than the week after. It's just something that it's not my favorite thing, but it's something that happens a lot. So it is just a thing now.
The week after is typically very self-congratulatory. What a great show we had. Now we're going to have some exhibition matches and they catch their breath. And then the next week, all right, let's start telling some stories.
All right, we got a few more minutes here. I don't know how many of these are.
I got a couple
Yes, let's go
that
to
I
you.
have for you. Okay.
Yes, let's hit it. Let's hit
So,
it.
these are like minor nitpicks that still happen that always make me kind of smile is, this is a company that's been on TV for 6 years and they still have so many production gaffes.
Oh my God, yeah.
It, like using the wrong microphone, starting a pre showing the wrong pre-tape. It's just very funny. And you would think that they would have been ironed out a little bit earlier, but they still consistently happen. We have a mutual friend that watches the shows, and we every time it happens, we'll be like, oh, look, there it is again.
Yeah.
Just get some TV people backstage. It's okay.
Well, they do. So actually, Brandon, I was just talking about this today because Brian Alvarez had mentioned that they are now having, and now I don't understand why now, after all this time, having regular production meetings with everyone. And that's typically what you do on like a TV production like that, because especially in wrestling where there's so many variables of you have to be here, they're going to do this, and so on and so forth. This really started bubbling up after the bill to grant before the bill to Grand Slam Australia, and it was the double jump off the
Yes,
structure for
the
Omega and Osprey.
moonsault, yeah.
Yeah, and they missed it. It's like that's the biggest spot of the show and probably one of your biggest spots in months, and you weren't in the right spots. It's like, how is that possible, right?
It
And
happened
even
with when Tekla debuted and she
yes.
laid out Jamie Hayter. The camera cut was bad.
Yeah. Yep. And I even noticed that a minor one this past week when during the tornado tag, Darby did jump off somewhere And they just completely, they caught like the very end of it. I think it was maybe a job off something, but it was high enough where it's like, you should have, it was obviously a planned thing and they missed it. You know, yeah, to your point, that's a great point. Yeah, there's always, the one thing I did notice at one point this year, I think they went to a conglomeration promo early and like they were kind of saying, like, okay, I think you're saying, okay, three, two, one, we'll do it. And I remember a kid catching one of those. That was pretty funny. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah. And then another one I have is they seem to have a lot of visa issues where folks could come in, they go out, they're here, they're not there. I, again, not a lawyer, don't know anything about immigration law, but if you're building a program with a person that is on some type of visa, I would hope that that is sorted before you plug them in.
Yeah, exactly. What else you got?
A lot of this has been sort of on the negative side. I do think that by and large, the product is good. And I do think that we should talk about that the quality of the in-ring, even though that the storylines haven't been as great as of late, particularly the tag team division, has been revelatory. It has been a resurgence where the tag team division earlier this year was not in a great place. Now, with the Young Bucks doing incredible work, some of the best work that they've done in AEW, Jet Speed, FTR, Lashley and Shelton Benjamin still existing as a tag team, Bandido and Brody King. That's a hell of a tag team division and is kind of carrying the show right now, which I
Yeah.
don't think has been the case for quite some time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, it's felt more focused, and it's felt like a focus. Like we want to make this a thing again. Because that was always the promise, right? Is that tag team wrestling is gonna lead the day. And for a lot, I mean, there's been a lot of great tag team matches in history. I mean, even look at Okada and Takeshita, you know, that's been like kind of a fun thing where they've used tag team wrestling and they haven't necessarily said we're going to get in the mix, but they were in the mix. You know, they were in a tag team title match at WrestleDream. That was great. And it just feels, has felt natural. So they're able to do those things. Yeah, it makes it feel even better. And yeah, that could definitely, again, if you're looking at ways to stand out, tag team, it's right there for the taking, but you got to really just commit to it and be like, this is going to be a thing, and it's always going to be a thing, and we can't let our eye off the ball with it.
Some of the best matches in the company history have been tag team matches.
Yep, absolutely.
Okada and Page versus the Bucks, the Bucks versus in the cage match against the Lucha Brothers. People really liked the Jurassic Express Young Bucks match from the last pay-per-view. I did not care for that. That was a little bit too much for me, a
Yep.
little too long, a little too PWG for something that I'm trying to watch on my major television wrestling program, but yeah.
Gotcha. What else you got?
Who do you think is the next breakout star? So if this year we saw Fletcher do it, obviously we talked about Takeshita, we talked about Willow, but for you, who is next?
I think it's Bandido.
Yeah.
Yeah, a healthy Bandido. I think it makes a lot of sense. They have to be willing to do it and commit to it. And it's tough because this tag team with, like mentioned, with Brody King is so much fun. Brody King is finally getting really a chance, an extended chance to like do his thing. So maybe you know, who knows when Buddy Matthews comes back or if he ever does. I mean, who knows? But yeah, I think Brody, I think Bandito should be it. And he his matches are good. He's healthy. He's out of this Chris Jericho feud. This is so much better than that. And he's putting on good stuff. And you can, this, that's, you'll know when they really want to get behind him when it's like, okay, we're going to book to a, again, if somebody like Takeshita wasn't going to win the Continental Classic, like I think he is. I mean, if he was in the Continental Classic, and again, depending on the tag team titles, who knows? But if he was like one of the final four, that's a nice, good be like, okay, he's definitely more of a, because no, to our point, no one's really taking that Ring of Honor world title seriously. But I mean, he had those great matches with Takeshita. And like, if they're like, we're going to do an Omega Bandido match and we're going to build to it, make it a really big thing. That's, you know, though, if Omega doesn't have that much time left, or if it's limited, let's make every single match he has a banger, right? And so I actually, it's talking about Omega. So I actually want to share this before I forget. So I was just kind of like, I went through the other night and I'm like, if he's got a short run, this is the stuff I need to see before he goes. I need to see, and this is just all singles, not tag team, not like a, you know, just single stuff. I need to see a Samoa Joe match.
Yep.
I need to see a Shelton Benjamin match.
Yes.
Adam Copeland, we've never seen that. I think that'd be fun. We've never seen a Swerve Strickland match. We've never seen him against Darby. An Andrade match would be fun. Bandido. How weird would an Omega versus Eddie Kingston match be? That'd be just kind of like a fun thing. And like, you know, to a lesser extent, like the Kyle Fletchers again, Josh Alexander, that could be a TV match, a rematch against Ospreay. But like, I need to see some of those, like if a Samoa Joe, Adam Copeland, a Swerve, a Darby, a Bandido, like some things where it's like, I don't want his run to end whenever it does. And we're like, we didn't get this or this, because they're sitting right there. Mm-hmm. If his end run was, I'm going to do open challenges every single pay-per-view, he's got a list of people that would be just like, let's just do it. And no titles, just a mano. Let's just go. There's a really fun run there that I think people would really get into.
Treating him like the final boss
character
without the title, as this guy represents all elite wrestling almost more than anybody else. He opened a lot of eyes to a new way of wrestling, this hyper-athletic, hyper-violent style. He should be that gatekeeper for the next generation, because he doesn't have a lot of time left. He's wrestling what? How many matches a year at this point can you realistically expect? Also, he's such a psycho that he's not going to change his style enough. Him and Ibushi, two peas in a pod, right? Just two absolute lunatics, where Kenny could tone down his style and maybe extend his career. But he is such a performer, and he wants to give the fans the Kenny Omega match. And if he only has 12 Kenny Omega matches left on his bump card, then they all need to mean so much.
Yeah, and they need to mean something. The titles don't have to be in the mix.
Do not need them.
It's stuff like, give us the stuff that we need to see again. A Swerve match. It's got matches that Bandido match. Stuff that would mean something to the guys, especially if he puts them over. That's the promise of this, right? Is that you get the best possible wrestling and a story mixed into it, and that would be ideal. So who's your breakout star for the year ahead, or who are you looking at?
Kevin Knight.
Kevin Knight. Okay.
Kevin Knight. Kevin Knight, I was not as familiar with your game as I should have been, and I apologize. I also did not think that Speedball Mike Bailey was going to work as well in AEW as he has. And again, look, we say wrestlers can lose. I can be wrong. I'm wrong all the time. I'm wrong every single day. That tag team has been great. Kevin Knight is a freak, and that is said with as much love in my heart as I can say. The athletic gifts that dude has are crazy, and he is only going to get better with all of this time on prominent TV working these tags. So when he goes on a singles run, he is going to be ready. And I do not think that there is a ceiling on him.
So that could be one where if Tony Khan sees the same things you do and says, like, I think we're going to, in 2026, make him go on a run. That's a good person to put in the Continental Classic. That's actually a perfect person,
yes,
right? And he doesn't have to win. Again, there's always one guy you see that's always like, the Beast Mortos or last, you know, Juice Robinson before he got hurt. It's like, that's a person that's going to lose. He doesn't have to be that, but he could be that one in the mix where he's, you know, wins, maybe loses more, he wins, but all of them are good. And he gets that experience where people are kind of like, all right. You know, people that may have not seen it in their head can be like, I see it now. So yeah, I could definitely see it. And that, again, that's that perfect progression of TNT title, to unify, or, you know, depending on kind of where things are at that, get in the mix. And that's your TNT is like your lower mid card of people like getting used to this, defending the title, making people care, putting on really fun matches. And yeah, I think that's a good call.
That's a great, do the Continental Classic. Maybe you get a match with Omega. Like,
yeah.
He likes what he saw in the Classic. Let's see what you got. You want to go 25 minutes? Let's go 25 minutes.
Yep. Any other final hot takes before we close out?
Any hot takes? Queen Aminata should have had a title a long time ago and is one of the more enjoyable wrestlers to watch on any AEW programming for me. I just like how disgustingly violent she is. I think she's great. I don't even know if that's a hot take, but.
That's a good hot take. Yeah. Someone that, again, this is, that's why the Ring of Honor brand exists. She should
And
be
that.
their, she should be their women's champion. Athena, elevate up, and that's get her the experience working before Dynamite, or doing those and working the four specials they have. But that's why things like that exist. Your top people should not be competing for the second. Just give the reps, to this next group that's going to come in and help support. It's kind of the frustrating thing because you see it, and it's like, what is the purpose of having a 1,000-day title reign? You could have had three other women get that expertise and feuds and how to build stuff up, and that's the whole thing. It's reps, it's practice, and yeah, it's because then all
It's
of a
their
sudden,
developmental. It's their
yeah,
developmental.
and it should be. It absolutely should be. The Guantanamo Bay list,
That's
Anthony Ogogo. Poor Danhausen, they should not extend that contract. Private Party, odd. Jeff Jarrett, remember the year started with Jeff Jarrett?
I'm gonna win the world title.
Yeah, and that one match, maybe two, done. Keith Lee,
Who
very
knows?
strange.
Yeah.
Britt Baker, Camille,
Oh.
Nyla Rose, their second AEW Women's Champion. She was the second, right? Her and Rhea was the,
Riho was the first.
yeah, and then I believe Rose was the second. Yeah, still active on Twitter, still representing the company, but just not around. Mercedes Martinez still listed on the roster, which is crazy. Yeah,
Today is the first day I thought of Mercedes Martinez in a long time. Yeah.
Hikaru Shida was one of the people that had visa issues.
Yep.
Serena Deeb is supposedly in this Ring of Honor pure women's title tournament. It's going to take maybe 2 years to finish. Is
And
Ruby So?
also, is that a good use of anyone's time?
I don't think so. No.
Yeah.
Two title defenses a year, and that's
Yeah.
it. Ruby Soho had a kid. Is she
Had a
ever
kid.
coming back? I don't know. Her and her husband Anthony are starting a like a game theme wrestling game theme restaurant or something like that, or a
Like a
bar.
board game theme,
Yeah,
something. Yeah,
but
good for
like
them.
he came back for that one match and he left. Like, is that done? The Butcher and the Blade, I assume they're both done. Matt
Well,
Sydal,
the blade is hurt.
the Blade is hurt. He's still
Yeah,
recovering, but they're
yeah.
not using the Butcher at all.
Which is a misuse, by the way, because there's a place for just that for Andy on TV.
Exact,
There always
exact.
is. Like a
Matt.
big dude that comes in, gets off three cool power moves, eats a pin, everybody's happy. Let's go.
Exactly. Matt Sydal, who still exists, and then the Kingdom, still under contract. Again, tag
Oh,
team wrestling, things
they
like
are?
that. Yes, they're still there.
Mike Bennett?
Yeah, they're
Yeah.
still. Yeah, they're still on the roster page. So at that point, they're still in their seat. But then I guess so is Nick Comoroto, and they don't use him either.
I do have one more for you, and I
Yeah.
know we're wrapping. What is this Eddie Kingston and Hook thing?
Yes, I had that on the list. They
I
should
saw
be.
that. I bolded it and underlined it in my brain
Yeah,
because what is this?
Eddie Kingston should have come back as part of this versus the Death Riders feud. He's like
Yes.
a perfect. That's his like eternal conflict. Is him and Moxley, his friend, his enemy, and he came back quietly in this random match against Big Bill, which just really didn't hit. And he's seen with Hook, but then Hook's challenging for the world title. It doesn't make any sense. Like Hook should be again a TNT title challenger. That should be what he's in the mix feuding with some of that group or things. No, you don't think so? Further
Hook should
up?
be Hook is a Ring of Honor use case. How many
Okay.
matches has the dude had where he's got to work more than suplexes and he's never had to really tell a story in a match, right?
True.
Like, go wrestle a Ring of Honor, man. You're good. People will like you. People will remember you. You have the presence. You just need to wrestle, and that's fine. It's okay to not be the best at something right away. Like,
Yep.
that doesn't happen. But yeah, the King Eddie comes back. Has the match against Bill. I did like saving his return for the pay-per-view pop. I thought that was fine. The match was whatever. Nobody's gonna remember it. But immediately to go to this program with Hook, which is only ceiling for that program is it helps Hook, doesn't really do anything for Eddie. When you have all of the stuff with like his best friend going on, with Samoa Joe still existing, Eddie Kingston hates everybody.
Yeah.
Eddie Kingston hates everybody. Everybody and would be able to turn a 1 minute backstage promo that leads to a match that leads to a program with anybody. He could do it.
Yeah.
And he's mentoring Hook. I am puzzled by this because everybody loves Eddie Kingston. Watches AEW.
I agree. Now I'm thinking about an Eddie Kingston versus Samoa Joe match. I'm very excited if that would be to
Yeah,
happen at
just
some
two
point.
dudes with hitting each other with frying pan hands. Like, give me that. Give me 12 minutes of that, right? Give
I'm
me him and
not.
Shibata. Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the deal is, but I feel we need over the next couple of weeks, we need some sort of like, what are we doing here? Because you can't just have Eddie Kingston isn't just a guy. He's like, he's the heart and soul guy of AEW. He has been for years. So you got to treat him that way because you may have better in ring, but not better in terms. But that's the personalities. That's like the, that's the thing they really got to hold on to is people really fucking like that guy, you
Yeah,
know, no matter
because he's
what.
really awesome.
And he feels real, you know, he
Yes.
just has that thing. And like, that's someone you get to always find something important to do with. Yeah, he's missed a lot of time, but unlike, you know, someone like Jamie Hayter, who just really hasn't been able to find that thing again, Eddie is that thing all the time. He's just, that is him. And to your point, you can rev him up in 3 minutes or less, and people will be like, all right, I'm in, but you got to commit to do it. So maybe the Continental Classic, maybe that'll be his breakout. He'll kind of back in the mix, but I don't want to have to
Yeah.
wait another, you know, month plus for that to happen. So got to get some momentum going.
Just it would be great if he just dropped Hook on his head like on Dynamite next week, and Hook just becomes the guy that people just leave. And then he goes away and he has to figure out what to do about that. And look, you told two stories. Great.
There
And
you
now
go.
Eddie Kingston is on my television and I want that.
There you go. Also, Nigel should have got the world title shot against Bryan Danielson after winning. He should have won the gauntlet match at Wembley Stadium in 2024. Remember, he made the surprise comeback, and then he took on Danielson at Grand Slam at the in Queens, but the title wasn't on the line. Like, he should have, instead of Christian winning it, and that just went nowhere. He should have
Oh,
just
God, yeah.
won that match. A big thing goes into it, and like that. That's one I've had on my list since that happened. I'm like, it's right there. Especially after, you remember that awful end to Moxley and Copeland, and Christian came out and tried to cash
Oh,
in, and he
just
ended up getting, it's awful, right?
we do
So
the Observer Awards at the end of the year, and that's got to be up for like worst booking decision, right?
I would think so.
It has to be
I don't think
the
so.
whole thing. No more contract like that.
The whole thing. Well, where can people check you out on social if so inclined?
You can find me on Twitter, which will never be X in my mind, at Della Camera. I'm not a prolific poster, but I am a prolific consumer of media, much to my wife's dismay. And you can read me on our wonderful website. What is it, like 9, 10 times a year? And thanks everybody for letting me keep getting my takes off.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. Mike Del Camera, thanks so much for joining me. And hopefully we'll talk again to bitch more about AEW and have some good things too, right? Say some good things.
Yeah, we got both sides of the coin, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Both sides. Both sides. Thanks a lot. Okay. Big thanks to Mike Del Camera for dropping by. That was a lot of fun. Hope you enjoyed it. Let me know, Josh Nason on X or Blue Sky. You have your own thoughts, hot takes, and so on and so forth. And let's see, we have the year in review series coming up. It begins this week. I believe I know I'm recording Wednesday. I think I'm doing January Wednesday. I'm waiting to hear back from one other person, so that could change. But regardless, you will hear the debut episode this week, January. And that's a fun series to do, free for all, as this episode is, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or here at WrestlingObserver.com. I appreciate the support. If you need more of me, and why wouldn't you? You hear some takes from Saturday night's action on the Sunday edition of Wrestling Observer Live. You can check that out. Also, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, just search Wrestling Observer or this very website as well. And I didn't do like a full recap or anything like that. I did some talking points and so forth. And something I kind of felt, I think I kind of alluded to on this episode about rematches. And rematches just, you know, when they have stipulations like the no DQ or the countouts, it makes it, to me, it's like, well, this is just telling you or telling the audience, these two guys just having a rematch with a straight singles, you know, straight wrestling match, so on, is not worth it, right? You have to throw in some sort of stipulation. I just kind of worry about that with today's wrestling, where we've kind of gone. There were two guys going in there, two women going in there, and having a rematch from a very good first match. It just isn't enough. So that just got, you know, little things like that. CM Punk title reign, the picture of all the champions. You got everyone talking on Saturday night and so on. So if you want to check that out, especially the early part, just again, go to the archives, Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I also included my interview I did last month with, that was on this very feed, with Mike Cashflow Walden of Tulsa King, also of OVW, plays Bigfoot on that show. And so I replayed that interview as well. And yeah, your interview series begins this week. Looking forward to it. And away we go. The year end is approaching quickly. It's hard to believe as I look outside in the nice New England fall day. And hopefully having a great day. Hope you have a great week. And I know they have a lot of choice in your podcast day. So I greatly appreciate the time that you spend with me or any of our fine podcast hosts here at WrestlingObserver.com. I'll talk to you later this week. Until that time and until next time, insert catchphrase here.